Now today we are looking again at Hebrews chapter 11. Now I'm going to read to you from verse 32 to verse 40. This will conclude our study in chapter 11. And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and Barak, and Samson, and Jephthah, also of David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. And all these, having obtained a good testimony, through faith did not receive the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. I'm sure the Lord will bless to us the reading of these verses. Now, this particular section of the epistle that we have read could well be termed hearers who lived on the principle of faith. Notice that in this section he seems to bring a whole number of them together. He said, "And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell," and so he mentions a whole list of names. Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel, and the prophets. Six names in particular, plus mention made of the prophets. Now then, may I suggest that down through this section, you first of all then look at the great exploits of faith. For these men who are mentioned were men who trusted God and did great exploits. As I have said, there are six heroes who are specially mentioned, plus the prophets. And in there, when it says the prophets, you might be able to put a whole host of names, such as Isaiah, Jeremiah, and so on. However, they all acted in faith at a time when everything was seemingly against them. For example, now, you know that Gideon was a man who had to go out and lead the armies of the Lord at a time when things seemed at a very, very low ebb. Yet, with a very small army and faith in his God, he went out and performed a great exploit and won a great victory. Notice what it says about these men, who through faith subdued kingdoms. Gideon and Barak. Now, Samson, you might say about Samson that why he made an awful lot of mistakes in life. There's nothing in chapter 11 of Hebrews said about his mistakes. It's just said that he acted in faith. There were times when Samson did do things in faith, and especially at the end, where he trusted his God and brought destruction on the enemies of God. So there were times when Samson acted in faith in his God. The only thing is that there came a time when he wished not that the Lord had departed from him. However, you have these others, Jephthah and David and Samuel. When you come to David, I'm sure everyone knows how David did great exploits. Who hasn't heard of the time when David went out and killed the Philistine who had defied the armies of God? You see, they subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, and so on. Now, David was a man who accomplished great exploits for God. Not only did he kill Goliath and deliver Israel, but there came the times when he had to go out and fight the Philistines as armies and so on after he became king. So right through the life of David, he had to lead the armies of the Lord, and he accomplished great things for God. And then you come to Samuel. Samuel has well been termed God's emergency man. You see, Samuel was a man who came in following the time of the judges and going on and linking up with the time of the kings, for he was the man who anointed David. So Samuel stood as God's emergency man. He had to act as a prophet, and he had to act as a priest, because he actually put on the priestly garments, and he had to act with the ephod. It was very strange, but the priesthood had broken down, and Samuel had to act as an emergency man. And so you find that little Samuel grew up determined to work for God, and he was a great man for the nation, a great leader, a great man for God in the time of an emergency. And then if you care to study the prophets, you'll discover that these prophets were raised up by God in times of emergency, when the nation had departed from God and had gone well away from God. Then you discover that God raised up his prophets, and they were sent out to deliver God's message to the people and turn them back again to the true worship of God. These prophets did great things, only they were treated very shamefully. Nevertheless, they were men of God. They acted in faith, while the general public, as it were, and the rest of the nation were acting in unbelief. The prophets stood out as men of faith. So therefore he says, what more shall I say, for the time would fail me to tell of these men and the great exploits, the things they did in dependence upon God at a time when everything was seemingly against them. Now I wonder, why is that written here in Hebrews 11? Simply this. The people who were the first recipients of this great epistle were themselves passing through times of trial and difficulty, and they were being persecuted, mistreated, and so they were to look back, they were to think of these great heroes of faith and how they acted for God in the midst of difficult times. They did great exploits because of their faith. Likewise, the people in the day when they received this epistle could do the same. It's handed down to us that in days when the world turns against the things of God, and even when people professing to be religious have turned away from their confidence in the living God, it is still possible for all of us to exercise faith in God and to live our lives on this principle of faith. I have already remarked about verse 35 in connection with the women, but let us notice what it says in the middle of that verse. You have this expression, and others. And others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Then you have that expression again in verse 36, and others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonments. Now that expression, and others, would suggest to us here the great endurance of faith. Notice what happened to them. They had a great trial of mockings and scourgings, chains and imprisonments. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. Here was the great endurance of faith. Some people have done great exploits by faith. Some have had a great endurance of faith. Now, let me suggest this, that expression, "and others," takes in a vast army of people. Their names are not given. You know that in certain countries today, they have the tomb of the unknown soldier. Now, no one is supposed to know whose remains were buried there in the grave of the unknown soldier. For the simple reason, this was supposed to be a representative of all the people who were engaged in the military campaign. Many lost their lives. And so they take one man as representing all the others. He is buried in this particular tomb, and it's called the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. That being so, people will go there and reverently bow their heads, not so much to remember the person who is buried there, but to remember those whom he represents. Now, that being so, let me suggest here, this is like the mention made of the unknown soldier. That is unknown to us, but not unknown to God. He says, "and others." Twice that is mentioned, once in the middle of verse 35, and again at the beginning of verse 36, "and others." I think there's a beautiful touch here for all of us. While we may not be able to rise to the height of the faith of Abraham, or the faith of Moses, nevertheless, surely we can come in here and be counted in with this group and others. It may be that you're one of the nameless ones. You know, there have been some men, even within, as it were, our own lifetime, or the generation before us, and these have been great men of faith, such as George Mueller of Bristol. If you've never read the life story of George Mueller, the one written by Dr. A.T. Pearson, you ought to read it. He was a man who did great exploits also for God. He's not only he's not the only one. There have been others who have done similar things. And you and I read about these people and we say, well, we couldn't do that. Perhaps not. But then you can come in like one of the others and others, and you may be able to do things in your own simple way. But now we come to consider another aspect of life lived on the principle of faith. While we may consider these people who did great exploits, we must consider another group, those who had great endurance. And it was faith that enabled them to do that. Now, we want you to consider the nameless multitude who suffered and died for their faith. Now, it is perfectly true that the others mentioned in verse 35, others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And then again, verse 36, "and others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy." Now, let us consider this just for a moment or two. Here I suggest we have the great endurance of faith. As you consider the nameless multitudes who suffered and died for their faith, we have been thinking perhaps of people whose names have gone down in history, of those who performed great exploits. But then what about those nameless multitudes who were not delivered? This sometimes comes as a kind of paradox. People don't understand it. Why it is that during times of persecution that one man or even a family may be delivered. I'm sure you have read, and I have read, the records of people who were acting as missionaries in strange countries, and they were imprisoned, and after a time in the prison they were liberated. Or it may be that some were running all the time from their persecutors and ultimately reached the place of deliverance, of the place of liberty. And it seemed wonderful how God worked in their lives and how they were able to perform certain exploits, and then ultimately they were delivered out of all their bondage. Yes, but what about the other? The others who were not delivered. What about the missionaries who went to different parts of the world and were massacred? What about missionaries who were put to death? What about missionaries who were put in the concentration camps and never came out? I wonder, my friend, do we ever consider that these people lived their life on the principle of faith just as much as the other people? For example, one man may be taken as a prisoner. He says that all during the time he was imprisoned, he had this confidence that one day he would be delivered. Well, that's good. And so therefore the day came when he was delivered and was able to write his story. But what about the others? The others who were put to death? What about the martyred missionaries? What about the martyred Christians? What about those who were shot on their own doorstep? What about those who were drowned in the rising floods of the tide? You see, many a dear Christian has become a martyr because they would not recant. They stood firm to the end. And sometimes when they were being burned at the stake, they were able to engage in prayer and pray for the salvation of the very people who were putting them to death. Now, when you read these things about people who became martyrs, it brings your thoughts to these verses in Hebrews 11, because now, while there were those who lived their life on the principle of faith and performed great exploits because of their faith, they did things that almost seemed impossible, but God gave them the strength to go on. Ah, but there were others who had to endure all the torments, the trials, the mockings, the scourgings. Some were stoned to death, some sawn asunder, and so on. There were those that wandered around. All they had to wear was sheepskins and goatskins. They were destitute. They didn't have the common things of life. They had to live in dens of the mountains, in caves, and so on. Now, these also obtained a good report. You see, the world was not worthy of them. It may be that some of them were treated like this because the world didn't think that they were worthy to live. The fact of the matter is, the world wasn't worthy of them. And God looked after them and took them home in due time, and they endured to the end. This is an aspect of faith that we must face. The Christian life is not always an easy life. Faith in God does not make things easy. Remember, Elijah, way back in the Old Testament, had his days of difficulty. He had to live up in the mountains, and all he had to drink was the water in the mountain stream, and one day the stream dried up. And for a given time, he had to be sustained in the home of a poor widow, who had only a little meal and a little oil, sufficient to make cakes every day, simple fare to feed on, but he endured. And so it is, I mention him as an example. Then you know that David had to live in a cave. He went down to the cave of Adullam and so on. These people endured. And it may be that you know people who have endured. What about you, my friend, and myself? Would we also be prepared to live our lives on this principle of faith and be able to endure even if affliction came? But now let us look at the closing part of this great chapter. And I suggest here we have the great expectation of faith. Verse 39, and these all, that is, those who did the great exploits, those who had great endurance, these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. Here is the great expectation of faith. They all looked forward and waited patiently for the better things that are prepared for them who love the Lord. I have mentioned in previous studies that going through the epistle to the Hebrews, the writer here sets forth that there were good things associated with Judaism, but there were better things associated with Christianity. Now here again he mentions better things. He said that there were better things prepared for them. God having provided some better thing for us. Now the fact of the matter is that what we have here in this life is nothing compared to what we shall have hereafter. Faith is that which lays hold upon that which is not yet seen. We saw that at the very beginning of this chapter. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And the man or the woman who has exercised faith in God can say in the midst of all circumstances, I believe God. That's what Paul said when he was in the midst of a great storm, when everything appeared to be lost. Then again, I remind you that the Lord Jesus Christ, before he left his own, he said, if I go, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. So I suggest that life lived on the principle of faith is not only a daily thing here. Looking backward to the foundation of our faith, the just shall live by faith. And so we live our lives daily on this principle of faith. It's a present experience. But it also looks to the future. There is the great expectation of faith. This world is not our home. We have pointed out we are just pilgrims and we are passing through. We are strangers. We are not in our home. Our home lies beyond this scene. And the Christian's great expectation with which he lays hold in faith is the fact that the Lord is coming again and will take us to be forever with Himself. Those who have passed on before, their bodies have been laid in the dust. But when the Lord comes, there shall be a great resurrection. They shall be raised again and given their new bodies. They shall be in the resurrected bodies. We who are alive and remain shall be caught up together to meet them, to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. We've great expectation. I trust then that what we've studied in Hebrews chapter 11 will help to encourage you and establish you in living the life on the principle of faith.